Hi, Robert.
Hi, Lucinda.
What a weekend.
Yeah, filled with some
Actually,
great
into the
stuff.
week.
That's true. You even had a fun Monday night.
Do you get into anything?
Friday was Halloween, right? So hung out, did some trick-or-treating with some kiddos and also ate too much candy. And then Saturday, I had a house party to go to. But even at the house party, guess where people were leaving early for?
Ballet X.
Ballet X. They were going to see Program A.
And that's where I went Saturday night.
Talk to me about it.
A few things. Lainey Jackson is the MVP of the 10 excerpts. She was in all but maybe four of them. And as I
Wow.
understand it, she had to sub in for two dancers who were out with injuries.
Oh my gosh,
So
that's crazy.
you saw the red pixie cut. People were picking up on it. They're like, whoa, she's doing another one. Like you could just hear the observations. Most impressive. Also impressive, as always, they had two short films placed in either half of the performance. There was one intermission. And something that they mentioned in one of them was that these dancers are getting an employer-sponsored retirement account with a match.
That's incredible.
Year-long contracts with vacation time, paid vacation for all 16. They really went back and talked about the history of Ballet X and how Christine and Matthew Neenan wanted to dance on their off time and do something creative and keep creating. And that's where they landed. And Robert, I think we need to dream bigger.
Oh. Okay,
It's
let's
so
do
inspiring.
it.
And then last night, Ballet X dancer Eli and I went to Mazzoni Center Honors, and it was a very, very last minute decision. At first, I was like, no, I'm not going to go as of 6:30 a.m. And then as of 7:10, I was like, you know what? I'm never going to get a chance to see Savion Glover tap.
Yeah.
It's never going to be this accessible. I need to go. And it was mind blowing.
Oh, incredible.
We walked into the Kimmel Center, checked our coats, we get in line for a drink, and a gaggle of women of a certain age and their husbands came up to Eli and said, we don't mean to interrupt. And they were fans. This is the
Oh,
second time this has
stop.
happened when I've been around him, and he is just so gracious.
Oh, I love it.
We have some more things to talk about. A few headlines from the past week, and I'm just going to gloss over the first three. Number one, blue chip galleries drop out of Art Basel, Miami Beach, with 2 months to go. Sacrificing some deposits there.
Yep, not great.
Pepperdine Museum director resigns amid censorship controversy. The way I read this is that the university hung her up to dry. They needed a scapegoat.
Not great.
Five more suspects arrested in connection with Louvre jewel heist.
Wait,
Did you see
five?
the photo of that guy?
Woo! Sign me up. Tell them where the family jewels are.
As of Wednesday, when this goes live, this broke yesterday. The PMA CEO is out.
Suda out. Let me tell you, I want to say I saw this coming the day before. It's
Oh, really?
never great when two of your trustees break with what has to be a very ironclad trustee confidentiality, as well as trustee censorship, to go to the Inquirer to get quoted on how they were treated through the rebranding process.
Were they consulted at all?
What I have read is they were consulted at the beginning of the process, but never received the final product to then rubber stamp. There was no public insight on how this would happen. The Philadelphia Magazine said this morning that she was fired for cause and that they told her via email.
You know what I'm going to say. Philadelphia is a union town, and that woman has been on my list since fall of 2022 when handlers, who knows who, installed priceless Matisse's and crossed the picket line.
I get that, you know, change is hard, right? And change is hard to happen at institutions. Mm-hmm. And I also had an inkling when she had canceled the antique show. Uh-huh. The Women's Committee uh-huh. has put the antique show together from like the beginning of time. Those like 50 members of that trustee board were built on the backs of the Women's Committee at the Philadelphia mm-hmm. Museum of Art. I mean, you don't take that away. You mm-mm. don't take that away. You find a way to juggle the 150th anniversary while mm-hmm. making sure that you're continuing to honor your advocates.
Yeah.
I wish her the best, but I know that the trustees have the best for the city and the museum in mind when they continue to make these decisions.
Agreed. Shall we get on to the conversation, Robert?
On to the conversation.
Greetings. This is Robert Marsh, and you're listening to Philly Has Heart podcast. In this podcast, we sit down with artists, gallerists, educators, curators, and other creatives who comprise the Philadelphia art world to discuss upcoming performances, exhibits, and other events and initiatives that are not to be missed. The art scene in Philadelphia is so rich that it can seem daunting. Consider this your weekend cultural recommendation. With me always is my producer, Lucinda Dierland.
Hello!
And today we have with us Deborah Adelson and Pavel Novak. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank well, you for having us.
Excellent. Yes. So we're super excited for the Philadelphia Contemporary Craft Show hosted by the Philadelphia Museum of Art. This year will open in November at the Convention Center. But going into your artwork itself, Deborah, can you take us through your journey that brought you to your respective role as an artist?
Well, I went to Tyler School of Art, and I majored in jewelry design and silversmithing. I actually started off as a photography major, and jewelry was across the hall, and I took it as thinking I was going to do something, like make something fun for myself.
Yeah.
And I ended up loving it, wow. And I felt natural using hand tools and working three-dimensionally, and that was the beginning of my journey.
What brought you to Philadelphia?
I guess it was coming to Tyler. I fell in love with Tyler when it was on the Elkins Park campus. I loved that it was its own inclusive community. I think when I went there to tour it, there were like figure drawing and figure modeling classes outside in like among the trees, and there were wacky kids running around in thrift store clothing. And I don't know, it was just, I went in the 90s and I just loved it.
Where are you from originally?
North Central Jersey.
Okay. And Pavel, how about yourself? What is your artistic journey?
So I am originally from Czechoslovakia, currently known as Czechia. I grew up about 20 minutes south of German border, so northern part, a little town called Česká Lípa. My parents' house was about 5 miles from the largest glass factory. So as a kid, I make several tours there with my parents and with the school, and I wanted to try to do something with my hands, because the Czech industry was and still is very, very popular. And my parents were supportive because they knew I'm going to be going to the school, which is very close.
Yeah.
So yes. They still going to.
How do they feel now?
Yeah, well, now feel it's very, very different now. Yes. And I grew up during the communism, mm-hmm. so there was no such a thing as a professional artist or professional athletes. Right. Those were considered no-nos.
Gotcha.
So when I went to the glass school, I was trained towards the industrial designs. So I grinded a lot of vases, chandeliers, mirrors. And then at the age of 17, the regime changed. And for the first time, I was able to start experimenting, making my small little designs.
Wow.
And did I answer that?
Yeah.
I don't know how much more.
Keep going. Yeah.
What brought you to the States?
After I finished a glass school, there were 2 years of mandatory work in the largest glass factory in Nový Bor, which was called Crystalex. Luckily for me, after about 6 months of me working there, which was not very enjoyable work, I got rescued by the principal of the school where I study, and he took me back and he offered me a teaching job. So I actually went back. I got a teacher's degree, and at the age of 20, I started teaching, which was very, very young. And as a teacher, I had 2.5 months holidays, and I got invited to Massachusetts by the guy named Josh Simpson, who is a glassblower, and he asked me to help him enhance his work with my cold working skills. Originally, it was for 6 months, and I turned 6 months into the 4 years. And then
Josh sponsored your
Josh sponsored yeah my stay, and I basically ended up in the United States because what I do for a living is considered a specialty.
Yes, definitely.
So I spent 4 years working for him, and then I moved to New Jersey after I met my wife, Kat, and I have my own studio now for the last 16 years.
Incredible. The integration of glass and jewelry setting is prevalent in both of your works. How did each of you discover your affinity for this innovative technique?
When I started doing shows almost 30 years ago, my work was a combination of plastics and sterling silver. And I actually wasn't making jewelry at the time because I had worked in New York City for a jewelry manufacturer, and I just needed a break from jewelry. Yeah. So when I was in school, I actually did a lot of, I thought I was going to go on to graduate school for industrial design. And so most of my senior thesis pieces were functional objects. And so when I started doing shows, I started with a line of functional objects like baby cups and baby spoons and wedding chalices and things for churches, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And the acrylic or plastics were handles. They were like, you know, it was integrated into it. And my work is a lot about color. And so the plastic was something that was inexpensive. I could access it. There used to be right here on Arch Street, there was a plastic store. You can buy it by the pound, some of their scrap by the pound.
Oh,
and
wow.
I used to go in every week and just through their scraps. And yes. So anyway, fast forward a lot of years, we met and, you know, we got married, and I have my son. I was pregnant with my son, who is now just turned 16. And the world is a different place than it was when I started making my work. And yeah. I no longer wanted to work with plastics. I all of a sudden was like having nightmares about every aspect of it.
Right.
Like, it's toxic. My footprint on the world, you know, like this is what I was pregnant, and your brain like explodes, you know, in all different directions. And so I pretty much stopped working with plastics cold turkey. And I had a pretty long, at that point, you know, even back then, I was getting into really good shows. I had written a book for Lark, which is a book publisher for art. They're no longer in business anymore, but I'd written a book about like the art of jewelry, plastics, and resin. But I just was like, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. And I stopped. And so then there was a bunch of years where I was just experimenting with other materials. And Pavel was like, you should work with glass. You should work glass. And I was like, I don't want to work with glass because you work with glass. I don't want to do that. So I instead like carved wood and I dyed wood and I played with all these other, I started doing more lapidary work and I was doing all sorts of stuff. And finally I was like, you know, when I had first gone to the Czech Republic to meet his parents, we went to one of these factories that your friends worked at, and they were doing engraving, which is cold working. It's a different type of cold work than he does. And I, you know, I thought about it somewhere in the back of my mind, and you know, we had talked about it, and he had said that, you know, there were classes in Corning at the museum school. And so I thought, you know what? I don't even know if this is something that I want to do. It was kind of a thought that maybe I could go in that direction, but I really resisted glass because it's kind of a misogynistic world, and I didn't want to do what he does because we're two artists married together, and I knew as soon as I did glass, people would think that he makes my work, which they do, which is frustrating.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to do something completely different than he does. Of course, I ended up falling in love with glass. I went up to Corning, and I was there for several weeks, and I loved I immersed myself in the museum, and you can go through all of their libraries and kind of go in and out of all of the studios. And I just fell in love with glass. And so then I had to come home, the little tiny bit of knowledge that I had had from going to Corning, and figure out a body of work. You know, that's a whole nother story. So that was years in the experimenting where I was still kind of making other random things. So there was like maybe 3 or 4 years that I was just kind of making random stuff before I like really figured out the body of work with glass, to integrate glass into my work.
Wow.
I dated a guy who, he had his degree in studio art and glass, maybe it was glass blowing. Mm. I dated a guy in grad school, but I think he only wanted to do it because he wanted to make bongs.
Oh. Yeah.
That's like 90% of the people who have that. And you know, that was my only experience with glass at Tyler, and the glass studio had a very distinct vibe. Which was the polar opposite of the jewelry studio, which had also a distinct vibe. Polar opposite of the glass. Like, we were all really uptight, and they were all like loosey-goosey, like right. So that was my only my thought about glass. You know,
was the one of the reason, not that you ask, one of the reason why I stopped teaching, because Corning is the largest museum in the world when it comes down to glass. And I had the privilege to go there for 11 years, every summer, every winter, to teach. And when they start accepting these teachers, these young kids who were doing smokeware, not pipes, a smokeware. And all of a sudden, it was widely accepted. But that was the only thing they could do, basically just pipes.
You should cut that.
Yeah. No, when you are in it. It was really discouraging.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say humiliating, but all of a sudden, you know, somebody who is 20...
It's a big side of glass now.
22 years old is on the same stage as people who have 30 years under their belt. And this is what I do. And it's perfectly usable, and you know, they spend half of the day high. You know, it's like, so there are a lot of people like that who basically go for a flame working to learn one thing and one thing only. But you know what? More power to them, because there's a huge market for it, especially now when it's legal,
right?
That's I know. Okay. he has pet peeves.
Can you tell us more about your art?
What I do, it's called cold working, and it's because there is no heat used during the process.
Wow.
Everything what I do is done on the mostly, I'm using a silicon carbide wheels, diamond wheels, and lots of water. It's a very popular technique, always was in the Central Europe, not only Czech Republic, but what used to be called Bohemia, which is part of the Germany, Austria. And so we were always known for cold working. Like, Italians are more known for glass blowing, but Central Europe, it was cutting and grinding glass. When I went to the school at Novi Bor, we were taught using a bubble-free optical material. It was all about the reflection. So that's what I consider perfect glass. However, I don't want people to think that if you have a vase at home and it has a bubble, that it's not worth it.
Right.
It's a completely different technique. When glass blower will get a new layer of glass, they will always trap the air in it, and that's where the bubbles come from. And there is nothing they can do about it. Mm-hmm. This has nothing to do with the skills. I, however, start with a block of glass, which is perfect. And I start on the diamond saw, and I will cut it into the sections, and then I will laminate them together using a colored epoxy. So essentially, I can turn big block of clear optical glass and put any color in it, and then I shape it and grind it, facet it, polish it, and on average, I need at least about two and a half weeks to finish one single piece. Wow. I did make pieces which took me up to 7-8 weeks to finish. So, and when I came to the United States, I realized that the vast majority of people want to do the glass blowing and the flame working, and because it's visually much more intriguing mm-hmm. things. You know, when you are a glass blower.
I don't think that people here even know that cold working is a thing. I didn't know cold working was a thing.
There are, I will give you a number. We are in teens, probably 14, 15 people in the entire United States doing what I do. I can be sitting here and tell you that's because it's extremely difficult and that's that. I don't think so.
It's because he's modest.
I'm not gonna say that it is challenging, that's for sure.
Right.
But
it's not even taught here.
I spent many years teaching this, and I always ask people after they finish 2 weeks with me, would you consider do this for a living? And I'm going to say maybe 2% said yes.
Wow.
And the 98% say, I'm sorry, I can. So I obviously ask why. And the answer was the same. It's the time. It's the furthest from the instant gratification. Uh-huh. It really takes, I always, when people come to my booth and they're looking at my stuff, I am telling them that it's 40% talent, 60% patience.
Yeah.
You have to spend the time, especially when it comes down to polishing, because I do have a pieces which if you would come to my studio, you would see me on one wheel on Monday. And if you would show up 4 days later, I'm doing the identical motion, identical thing.
Wow.
So I think that's the biggest turnoff. How much time it takes, but
there's so much time involved in it, and there, it's also so fragile. It's so easy to screw up.
Right.
Yeah.
So you can, either one of us at any point in the process can destroy the piece that we've just spent hours and hours and hours on, and it happens.
Yeah.
You know, she when she was
it happens.
Because I went on a tour of the museum when I was at Corning. I went on a lot of different tours, but there was one, and the tour guide was going through different stages of different types of glass, and we were in an ancient room, and he's showing us this ancient mold, and he says, and now at this point, if the glass blower was to make a mistake, he would lose 10 minutes of work. And so anytime we destroy anything in our house, I'm like, I've just destroyed 10 minutes.
Yeah,
when it's like, I spent 10 minutes under my bench looking for a stone I just dropped. Right.
No,
like,
I
spent 10 minutes just setting up the machine. I spent 10 minutes, like 10 minutes.
It's nothing.
It's nothing. Wow. Like there's literally nothing.
I am in point of my career because I do this for 33 years now. I kind of ran out all the simplistic ideas. Mm-hmm. So right now I am really getting like to 3 weeks minimum.
Wow.
Because I try to get, you know, more colors in it and more faster than the scale is changing. So yeah, when somebody say if I make a mistake I will lose 10 minutes, it's like absolutely nothing.
It's absurd.
Yeah. And I'm still kind of shocked that I'm here 25 plus years and that the market is not expanding. It's the glass blowing and the flame working world is giant.
Right.
But the cold working.
Well, I think we have to have a little bit of screw loose.
Yeah.
To continue. No,
to continue doing
something
so
to it because
when
I shape my work, it's basically just my wheels and hands, and I want to see it and I want to feel it.
Yeah.
When the work progresses and I get into the polish and pre-polish, I am using noise canceling headphones and I'm listening music because I need to drift away. Because like Deb said, if I'm going to be doing the same thing and thinking about that,
right,
what I'm doing, what I'm gonna, and then I'm going to do the same thing tomorrow and day after, I would go literally nuts. Yeah. So when I go into the polish, I basically get into the roof and listen to music, and it allows me to think about something else. And I'm not saying you don't have to be focused, but
you need
a little bit of distraction. Yeah. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing for
one
such
of
a
our,
long time.
One of our listeners is always excited to hear what artists listen to when they were making their art.
It needs to be something with the beat. Because if I would be listening classic music, something slow, it would reflect in my motion. I would be extremely, extremely slow.
Gotcha.
In terms of variety, I am really all over the place. I used to be embarrassed. People ask me that very, very often. What do you listen?
Can I answer what you listen to?
But, well, I'm going to stick to the English.
He listens to Czech music. And it's really funny because I go into his studio sometimes. He doesn't have the headphones on. And it's like, I know the song. And it's...
It's
not
all cover
in
version.
English. They're all covers of like 80s.
Oh, wow.
But it's funny.
Oh, yeah. That's incredible.
It's like a Saturday Night Live skit.
But in terms of English music, I can start my day with Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
Throughout the day, I can switch to Bruce Springsteen and end my day with Elvis Presley or even Johnny Cash.
Nice.
Nice. I mean, the Johnny Cash was a huge discovery to me when I was here. Well, when I was in the Czech Republic, didn't know that even exists. And I don't listen any country music.
Yeah.
Johnny Cash was just different.
He's a little different.
And when I was able to finally understand the lyrics, I mean, he was a storyteller. Yeah, so
that's
I am
incredible.
All over the place. What do you listen?
I don't listen to music while I work because I find that I work to the beat. And it's too distracting. So I listen to podcasts or Audible.
Excellent.
Books on tape. Well, they're not books on tape anymore, but, you know, audiobooks.
Right.
You know, I go through podcasts. Like, at this point, I'm like, okay, what can I listen
to?
There's like,
there?
Yeah.
I really listen to Philly Has Heart.
I actually listen to all of them.
Oh, my God.
So as soon as she told us, I was like, okay,
she did.
All right,
she really
I did.
Did.
Okay.
Pop on.
I all day work like 12 hours a day. And I need a voice, even when I, like, I just need the voice. I like, you know, I like to listen to good storytelling.
That's awesome.
I like to hear about people's processes. And
oh, yeah.
I will say that's a lot of Robert.
Yeah, that is a lot of Robert. going back a little, how difficult is it to find the materials you use right now for your work?
Very.
Yeah.
Very. Yeah, I used to... was purchasing glass in Pennsylvania and Schott company. Schott is a German company who was making this very specific type of glass. Mm-hmm. And that source closed about 7 years ago. They were nice enough to call me and they literally said, Pavel, we're not going to be able to stay in the business. We have only 6 other people who are purchasing this type of glass.
Wow.
Yeah, it is very expensive. That's why I call it, it's a perfect glass. It is really, really beautiful. But right now I am importing glass from a Czech Republic.
Gotcha.
Wow. Yeah.
I actually use a mix of the same glass that he uses. I use some of the optical glass. But I use a mix of all different types of glass because I'm not heating it. I can use glass that has different coefficients. It doesn't really matter. My process is a little different. He uses colored epoxy to get his color, where I get the color from different types of glass that I laminate together. You know, we went through the struggle of finding a new supplier for the optical glass, but I kind of trash pick and find the different types of glass that I use all over the place.
Excellent.
A Heineken bottle?
I could.
Nice.
So the technique, what I'm doing, the cold working, is I am using, my wheels are 30-inch diameter. I am using really large, flat wheels. What Deb does, she's using engraving wheels, which is the polar opposite of what I do. Her wheels are like a quarter of an inch and smaller. I mean, we're talking about 2-3 millimeters.
Wow.
So...
We both do cold work, but we do completely cold work, different techniques.
It is completely different technique.
We have different color sensibilities. It always amuses me when people think because that people it's the don't same know. Person making it. Right. They just assume that he makes the glass.
Yeah, the cold working is still
completely different sensibilities.
That's why I like being like and doing the show in Philly because I take it as I'm just proud of my work, but I take the opportunity to explain the process. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say that maybe 5% of people will interrupt me and they say, oh, you don't have to go through your shtick. I know what I'm looking at. Wow. But 95% of people hear the word cold working for the very first time.
Yeah.
Which I'm not going to hold against them. Right. It's new, and that's why these shows are important for us to attend and be there.
It's such a great place for the audience or the purchaser to actually get to speak with the artist, learn about your techniques, then see how each one of those pieces probably have their own story to share as well.
I like to bring one piece, which is a work in progress. So I'm showing essentially block of glass. This is how it looks when it comes. How it looks after I cut it on the diamond saw. And since it's a cube, it has a 6 different facets, and I need 6 different steps to go from very beginning to very end.
Right.
So I go step by step and showing to them. People want to hold the block, they want to touch it, and all of a sudden it makes much more sense.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what it takes to get from point A to the point B.
Oh, and that's what would you recommend guests come to see at this year's PMA craft show?
What would I?
Yes.
Oh my God, there's so much to see there. You know, I think the best part about coming to the show, as he mentioned, is that people get to actually meet the artists that made the thing that's in front of them.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we come from a culture where it's hard to believe, like, you know, meat comes in packages. People don't realize that everything's handmade.
Yeah.
Even when it's not, when you think, you know, every single thing is made by somebody, even if it's in a factory. That we make these works of art that are finished products that people can use, and they're luxury items, one-of-a-kind things that people couldn't get anywhere else.
Right.
I think that's the best part of the show.
It's the best. Ugh.
And it's here in Philly.
Yes, exactly. Philadelphia Art Museum, Philadelphia Contemporary Craft Show, is the annual event organized by the museum, and it will be this year, November 7th through the 9th, at the Pennsylvania Convention Center, with a preview gala on November 6th. Check out handcrafted works from hundreds of artists across various categories like jewelry, ceramics, glass, and fiber art. Thank you both so much for being with us today. Where can our audience find you online or in real life?
Well, my website is deborahadelsonjewelry.com, and my Instagram is @debadelsonjewelry, and his website is
pavelnovagglass.com.
And he's not on social media because he's stubborn.
We'll link that in the show notes.
Thanks. Excellent. All right. We're going to end with some rapid-fire questions for you.
Uh-oh, here it comes.
If you could describe the Philly art scene in one word.
Alive.
Cheesesteaks, with whiz or without?
With.
If you could work in any other medium and achieve the same success that you have now, what would it be?
I'm going to say clay.
I think I would do fiber.
Your favorite art museum outside of Philadelphia?
Corning Museum of Glass.
Nice.
Been there many, many times. And it's not just what's inside. The building itself is beautiful.
Wow.
I'm going to say the St. Louis Museum, the art museum there.
Nice.
It's awesome.
Excellent. Your favorite Philadelphia neighborhood?
Chinatown.
Yeah, because he likes to eat.
Love it. Yes. Love it.
we love to go around and see the murals around town and the public art. And so I don't know that I have necessarily a favorite neighborhood, but I love all of the public art, murals around town.
This one usually seems a lot funnier and less likely, but if you could heist or steal any piece in the world, what would it be?
And I was going to say something from the art museum, but I'm actually going to bring it back to the show because there's an artist whose work I think is phenomenal. She makes these plique azure enamel goblets that are just fantastic. Wow. And the skill it takes to make them is incredible. Amy Roper Lyons, I would say
Excellent.
I would steal one of those pieces.
Okay. We'll have to check it out.
Well, you should.
I mean, we
should.
Are not going to steal it. Right. But...
Well, you'll see it and you'll understand. Okay. There's some really phenomenal work so at the show. But if I was going to pick one thing to just swipe, that's what I would take. I will not swipe it, Amy.
I would steal a glass red pyramid, which is... at the Corning Museum of Glass. It's artwork done by Czech artists Libensky and Brichtova. Nice. And they were the biggest name in the glass world. Wow. And it was one of the biggest pieces they ever made. And I will never, ever get even close to that size. But nice. It's a really, really stunning and famous piece. So
beautiful.
I would take that one.
Well, thank you both again. And everybody, check out the Philadelphia Museum of Art Contemporary Craft Show. Everybody, check out the Philadelphia Art Museum Contemporary Craft Show.
Thank you guys so much for being here.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, you know, I looked up what that pyramid looked like, and I'm linking a photo of it in the show notes.
I can't wait to see the work.
But you don't get an idea of the scale, quite honestly.
Yeah.
Because it's photographed with a very clean background. We have a ton of things leading into this weekend and for this weekend. So buckle up, people.
Friend of the pod, Carolyn Harper's exhibition, Prison Portrait Project, Faces of Despair, Hope, and Transformation is opening today and will run through the 30th at Muse Gallery.
The Philadelphia Chamber Music Society presents Modigliani Quartet tomorrow at 7:30 at the Kimmel Center. And this is one of the highlights our guest from PCMS Marquise recommended.
Philadelphia Orchestra presents Vivaldi's The Four Seasons on November 7th at 7 p.m. at the Kimmel Center.
The 49th annual PMA Contemporary Craft Show is kicking off on November 7th and running through the 9th at the Philadelphia Convention Center.
An exhibition by Jake Weinstein Klanker is opening at Works on Paper on November 7th.
Fernando Postigo's Postigo Express, documenting the Basque conflict in San Sebastian, 1977 to 2003, is opening at UPenn's Arthur Ross Gallery on November 7th.
Young Friends of the Philadelphia Ballet, Brunch at the Bar, is on November 9th from 11 to 1.
And finally, we have been counting down to this, but the traveling exhibition, Dreamworld, Surrealism at 100, opens at the PMA on November 8th and runs until February 16th.
The Prince Center is celebrating its 110th birthday with a champagne reception and main event Saturday, December 6th. A benefit auction opens on Saturday, November 22nd and closes Sunday, December 7th.
Pull out your checkbooks.
Check out the Prince Center's websites for more information and additional opportunities to get previews to the show. And with that, Philly has heart.
And art.
Thanks for tuning in to Philly Has Heart, where we get to know the people at the heart of Philadelphia culture. Follow us, share the love, and tune on in on Thursdays for your weekly cultural update.